So should business owners with a criminal history be denied a loan in a case like that? I thought we'd get the details on this and find out more about what's really going on legally from attorney Jared McClain of the new Civil Liberties Alliance. Jared, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Lars.
So legally, can somebody with a criminal history be denied a loan?
Well, as it stands right now, they can. MCLA challenged that this past week in the District Court of Maryland because Congress passed the CARES Act. I think most of your listeners are probably familiar. It was historic in scope. They did two big things. They created the program where everybody gets that check for up to $1,200 in the mail, and they created the PPP. And Congress told the Small Business Administration, get this off the ground as soon as possible. No need to go through the normal process of creating an agency program because small businesses need these money now. And Congress set two criteria that a small business needs to meet in order to qualify for this program. It needs to have been in business on February 15, 2020, and it has to have employees that it pays. That's it. That's the complete list of criteria. And SBA came out and promulgated a rule that recognized those criteria, but then said, but wait, even if you check those two boxes that Congress said you had to check, we're not going to give the loans to any businesses on this list that we've created. And one of the businesses that they put on the list is businesses owned by persons with a criminal record. So
Is there some legitimacy in a government agency trying to make sure that the public's money is protected? Because the minute this program came out, I said, number one, it looks like it's essential because you have all these businesses with no revenue coming in at all, which means their fixed costs are going to go on while they have no revenue going on, and it might literally wipe out jobs, legitimate businesses. But it also could be a great opportunity for thieves to take advantage of the program, to create a business on paper, show all the right piece of paper, say, send me the money, and once you get the money's gone, and then trying to find it. Was this not a legitimate way to protect the taxpayers' money?
So I guess there's two things. I agree with you that the government, when the government's giving out benefits like this, the government's able to decide who should be getting these benefits and how, and in this case, Congress did decide. Congress decided that this is a national emergency. We need these loans to go to any business. And in the statute, they said to any business. And it wasn't, there was no room, there was no delegation of authority to SBA to decide essentially who's worthy and not worthy of getting these loans.
Okay, because I mean, one of the concerns I've got with the Congress also said, let's push a lot of money out for unemployment, including extra checks. And the state of Washington, I happen to be a state of Washington resident, got taken for almost $1 billion because they said, pay the money out to people who are unemployed. Well, Nigerian scam artists figured out how to fleece the program for almost $1 billion. And I guess as much as I want to support small businesses, I also want to make sure the public's dollars are protected.
Right. And so I think the one way Congress tried to accomplish that was with its criteria that you had to have been in business. You have to have your paperwork showing that you didn't just come up with this business after you knew that this loan program was coming out. And there have to be employees on the book. And your bank's facilitating a loan for you, and banks aren't giving these loans to people without a banking relationship with the bank. So that also is a check on these loans going where they're not supposed to.
How many people were denied?
We don't have statistics on that. And one reason is, so on the PPP loan application, it says, it includes eight questions, and two of the eight questions have to do with criminal history. And it says, if you answer yes to questions 5 or 6, you are not eligible for a loan. So when Mr. Wilkes, our client, he goes into his local bank and hands them this form, and he's checked yes to box 5 or 6, the bank doesn't even, there's nothing for the bank to even process. So there's no way to even know how many people that this is hurt.
So the SBA would not have gathered that paperwork up saying we went out and issued 150,000 loans, but we denied 5,000 of them based on this criteria. They didn't gather any of that?
We haven't gone through discovery in our case yet, but my understanding is that a lot of these loans aren't being processed in the first place, so they're not even being properly denied.
Yeah, because it would be nice to have the track record to find out you denied 500 loans and look at them. Does the SBA have any independent authority? I mean, as a government agency that's used to putting out loans to do this, I know they didn't put it specifically in the CARES Act, but does the SBA on its own have the ability, you know, that catch-all language they put in a lot of bills that says the agency has the authority to make such rules and regulations as to safeguard, you know, how the program operates. You've seen that kind of catch-all language, haven't you?
Yeah, and that's where SBA got this list from, because in some of SBA's other loan programs, they apply the same list. And so they just took that list that they apply to other types of loans that they have to offer, and they put it on here, but there wasn't actually that grant of authority that you usually see in statutes, because this was just such a unique situation.
Okay, so what's the proper disposition of this? I mean, Carmen's Corner Store is the client, so they should have received a loan for some amount. They didn't, and it may have wiped them out, taken them out of business. What's the way to set this right?
So what we're doing, there have been some of these cases brought across the country, brought by other types of businesses that are on SBA's ineligibility list.
Right.
And what the courts have done in those cases is basically tell SBA you're not allowed to enforce this rule and keep this person's spot in line. They're applying for $31,000. Set that $31,000 aside. Don't give it to them yet, but just let's let the legal system work rather than solving all this on the rush basis, because the program ends on June 30th. So we need a court to act pretty quickly.
And Jared, I was going to say, you do, because let's say you've got a legitimate business. The Congress didn't say limited based on criminal background. The person gets denied 30 grand, and while no revenue's coming in until that particular corner of America starts to open up again, the denial of the 30 grand might literally wipe the business out, because if they're still paying bricks and mortar costs, utility costs, insurance costs, all these other costs that go on, whether you got money coming in or not, you could literally wipe that business out, and by the time the SBA gets around to giving them the money, the entity they were going to give it to doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, and it's not just the business that suffers, because we call it the PPP, but the first word there is paycheck, and this program was put in place to help the workers as much as it was the small businesses. And if you're not able to pay payroll, your employees are either going to be out of work on unemployment, or they're going to go find a new job when some of these other businesses open back up, and then you're going to have to retrain staff if you're even able to reopen again.
Yeah, because they may have gone to work for somebody else.
Right, someone who doesn't have their PPP money held up in court.
Right. So you think that the courts will get to this fairly quickly?
We sure hope so. It's kind of, we're asking for immediate relief. Courts aren't known for, the wheels of justice don't typically turn that quickly, but in other places of the country, the judges have recognized that the importance and the expediency of these cases, and the judges have stepped in and acted pretty quickly.
Because, Jared, I'm not an attorney, but I understand usually when you go to court and ask for a temporary restraining order, a TRO, it's because you say, if you don't cause this to happen or not to happen, we could see irreparable damage. And I guess somebody could argue, well, you can always reopen Carmen's Corner Store someday, but if you go south on the lease payments and things like that, you may not be able to reopen it.
Right. And not only might he not be able to reopen, but the government created this benefit system for all small businesses. And once June 30 hits, that money runs out. And there's no time at which he's going to be able to get one of these fully forgivable loans that all other small businesses have been able to get. We've already handed out, $600 billion of these loans.
Yeah, you'd think they'd be able to get to it now. Jared McClain with the new Civil Liberties Alliance.